You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast.
Yo, yo, mi gente, what's up? How are you guys all doing? Coming at you once again, Carlos and Christian with La Verdad Podcast.
Yo,
I know it's going great. Another week, another episode. Everything's going steady and smooth.
It's getting better, man. It's getting better.
It's a beautiful thing. I'm falling in love with this whole podcast medium.
For sure.
Wow, so you just wrapped up a real nice interview. Really, I wouldn't even call it an interview. It's really just a conversation.
Yeah,
for sure. It's kind of a little similar to last week's, but even more of a conversational flow where we had a couple of friends. Well, not we, Christian did. Out in Chicago, he had a couple of friends. This is an episode where I'm not really a big part of. I couldn't make it out to Chicago, but I will be there next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this episode, as you will listen to it later on, mi gente, is that it takes a little bit of a unique turn. We talked a little bit more about the Cuban immigration story from one of my good friends. His name is Ociel Gonzalez, who also happens to be a teacher, an elementary school teacher over in Boston. And we also had Ross Martinez from CBS Radio, who joined us for a quick second. And he's adding his little comments here and there. But it was definitely a good vibe. We had a couple beers open. We were just definitely talking about the struggle, or if there was any struggle. And then we also talked about teaching, since that's what he does. So it was very, very cool, man, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah. And you guys, your conversation went all over, but it transitioned mm-hmm. well, right? Anywhere from immigration to going to college as Latinos, what that experience was like. You guys talked about racism. You guys talked about education, sort of how Ociel sees his role as a teacher.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to point out is that we want you to bear with us, because for about the first half of the other conversation, one of the mics is having some major issues. We couldn't catch it on the mixer while recording live, but I promise you, just kind of get through it. It will get better. It's really just about that first half hour. But towards the end of it, it clears up a lot more once that mistake is caught.
And that's the beauty of chilling with friends, you know what I'm saying? So I didn't want to cut it off and cut the flow of the conversation. So we got into it, and I know you mentioned a little bit, it goes everywhere. It's kind of crazy. Like, we could have definitely done this podcast like for 3-4 episodes, but I just wanted to get his idea, his input of what it was to be an immigrant here in the U.S., and then we go into talking about teaching urban minorities and what we need to do in order for them to succeed later on in life.
Yeah, yeah. It's a conversation that I really wish I could have been there for, just because I also work with students all the time. I'm in education myself. But, you know, coming up in over the next few weeks, we're going to have a few convos that will touch on it as well. And so, honestly, La Verdad Podcast is going great. The love has still been strong. Remember, subscribe, rate, review. We just got approved on Google Play. So if you got friends, or if you yourself have Android and you're not feeling the SoundCloud app, check it. They're not fully live for everyone yet, but what I'm hearing is it's going to be a slow rollout. So Google Play is going to have a podcast platform.
Okay.
And we're already approved for it. So if you see it on your phone, you're good to go. If not, then you got to wait. I think towards the end of April, going into May, most phones should have it, most of the Android phones, and that's a huge other market, since I know a lot of folks associate podcasts just with iTunes. And so it is changing, and we're ahead of the curve. We're ready. They just need to kind of release it for everyone now.
Yeah, and I also wanted to give a shout out to Ross Martinez. He also has his own little podcast, and it's called Yo Let Me Talk. And you can find him on Facebook. If you just put in Yo Let Me Talk, you'll be able to get him there. He told me that he's going to be launching this Wednesday. Yeah, he's going to be launching Wednesday, and then our show's coming up on Thursday. So I want to give him major props. Thank you, Ross, for jumping in on such late notice, but he just came in out of nowhere. We're also going to team up with him, probably jump into his show. I'll probably jump in there. They're local here in Chicago as well. So trying to support each other, supporting local talent and Latino talent as well.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this on the day we launch, then on the day we launch this episode, I should say, then Ross's podcast should have gone live by then. So I'm going to add it to the show notes. So if you just read the little description for this episode, you're going to see the link to his Facebook page for Yo, Let Me Talk. And from there, I'm sure you could find, you know, all his other social media. You could find the link to his new podcast as well. And so support him, subscribe, rate, review them also. And, you know, we're just trying to show some love.
Yeah, for sure. And also, I wanted to bring up that this specific episode might have some debating points. So I want you guys to dialogue with us. You know, hit us up on Facebook, message us. Where could they find us, Carlos?
La Verdad LTD. If you want to send us an email, info@laverdadltd.com. Send us a message. We'll read it on air if it's kind of relating to what we're talking about. Yeah. But really, when we debate, when we go back and forth in any of these episodes, it's about spreading our truth. Sometimes, you know, some people might not have too many facts to back it up. They could get called out on it. But it's all, you know, it's all in fun. It's all in learning. It's all in just kind of sharing and vibing with one another.
Yeah, man. So once again, mi gente, muchas gracias. Thank you guys for tuning in again. And you'll definitely love what we have in store for you guys. And keep in mind, if you're in the Chicago area, April 15, 16, we're going to be doing some shows here in the Chicago area. So hit us up on our email or hit us up on Facebook and see if you want to join in.
All right, man. So without further ado, Ociel and Ross kicking it with Christian in Chicago for episode number 5.
Once again, we're back at it with La Verdad. Today we have a group of individuals that I will say they're my buddies, you know, and we've grown up together in the last couple of years, and we actually were able to live in the same areas and kind of dwell together at the same time and party up or whatever you want to call it.
ended on party.
Yeah.
Well, like party, like have a 5-hour conversation about
something. Yeah, for hours, yeah. And then it was already the next
everybody's
day.
In there partying. And we're like,
that's what we like to call a symposium.
So it's my pleasure to have here Ociel Gonzalez, who comes straight from Boston, checking out Chi-Town again, eating some Italian beefs.
Yes, sir. What it is.
And we also have Ross Martinez from CBS Radio, also has his own podcast called Yo, Let Me Speak.
What's up?
So, yo, guys, man, this is interesting, man. We haven't really done anything like this. We used to always talk about this in the past, and we used to chill for hours, right? And now we're actually getting together and recording this for the people to listen. So today we're going to talk a little bit about the immigrant story from Ociel's perspective. He came from Cuba. He'll talk a little bit more about it. And then we're going to talk about the urban Hispanic urban Latino or urban minority going into college or higher education and how you guys did it. You know, both of you guys are graduates, all three of us. And we actually went through that and it was a little bit hard. So, Ociel, go ahead and you know, you came from Cuba. What's your story behind it?
Well, I came from Cuba when I was 13 years old. Came through the visa lottery and we had family here. So, you know, acclimating to the culture was a long process, but we had a lot of support. You know, I ended up going to several different high schools, kind of went through my troubles in high school a little bit, but, I ended up, going to Harvard University for undergrad, and I'm now finishing up my master's in education, and I'm an educator by trade.
I forgot to mention that you're a teacher as well, right?
That's
elementary
right.
school teacher.
I'm an elementary school teacher.
So you came here at what age?
13.
13. So straight to high school. Did you know English?
I knew a little English. You know, some English that they teach in Cuba, some vocabulary. But I took about maybe 6 months of ESL classes and stuff like that too.
Okay.
Get me to a certain level.
So was it hard coming in here and was it like a culture shock? Did you have an idea of what America was like, the U.S. was like and all that?
Well, we had a warped idea. I think that we imagined the United States as a place of you know, unconditional prosperity and just sort of a paradise.
Interesting.
And I would say that there was some shock because obviously there was struggle, financial struggle, the social struggle of going to a new place, meeting new people, kind of figuring out what their expectations are and how to interact with them in a respectful way. But I think it was expected that there was going to be a period of like sort of learning to cope and learning to deal with the culture. So,
and big props, man, to those that come here from another country, because, man, I would be scared. Like, I remember I went to Mexico, right? I went to where did I go? Cancun, right? And to me, I was like, yo, this is like mad weird. I don't know what's going to happen in Mexico. And just that feeling, I'm like, what if I was actually moving there? Like, how do people do that? Like, and I know, Ross, your family is your second generation, I think, or first generation.
First generation.
Yeah, so your parents immigrated here, right?
Both, my mom and dad were both born over there. My mom from Monterrey.
Yeah.
My dad from San Luis. My dad came over as a baby, and my mom, she did the more interesting way. Let's just put it that way. She found the way a couple times.
So I'm saying, man, that's hard, dude, because I'll be scared, man. Like, even when I went off to college, bro, I went off to college just an hour away, and I was like, yo, like, this is mad weird. Like, I don't know, you know?
Papa, mira, look, for me, my grammar school was legit four blocks from my high school.
Yeah.
And the college that we went to, Lewis University, it was recruiting from my high school.
Yeah.
I kept it in the family.
Oh, yeah, you stayed there. So it's a completely different feeling, man. And do you think it shaped you in your life, like, in a different way? Do you think you learned something out of this or not?
Yeah, I mean, going to American public schools, going to college here, and now being in higher education, it's pretty much, like, central to who I am, to my identity, to my values, to my passion, to my hobbies, really pretty much everything, my social circles, you know, obviously people I know. So, and that's something that, you know, that I embrace. That's not something that I look back as a kind of obstacle or anything. It's just a path that you have to walk.
And it's interesting that you say that. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this later on. And I feel like a lot of people that come here, they want to forget that, right? They don't want to embrace it. And we talked about this in the last episode that we had, the Detroit episode. And if you haven't heard it, go back to iTunes or SoundCloud and take
right
a quick
now.
Listen.
Pause
this episode, go back. We talked about leaving and going back, right? And giving back to the community that actually raised you and brought you back, but embracing the fact that you came from there the whole time. And later on in this episode, we might talk a little bit about assimilation and forgetting who you really are. And it tends to happen a lot in our Latino community or in the minorities.
Later generations not self-identifying from their immigrant status to just kind of be like, I'm not Mexican. I'm American.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of our listeners might have a couple of different perspectives behind that, and that's why, you know, feel free to chime in, hit us up. That's why this is La Verdad. We speak the truth, what we feel. And I feel like, you know, I talked to a couple of people that, you know, quote unquote, say, oh, well, I'm Mexican American. You know, I was born here. And I sit there, I'm like, man, like, are you forgetting your culture? And then sometimes I'm like, man, is that wrong for me to think like that? But, you know, I've been raised where it's like, you're going to understand Puerto Rico. You're going to understand where we came from. You know, and those that don't know, I'm from Puerto Rico. And I always like to embrace that. And then it wasn't until, like, I got into high school and college that I was able to understand the struggle that my grandparents went through. Mm-hmm. To bring me where I'm at, and I always want to embrace that, and that's what I wanted to touch upon, was embracing that culture. So,
yeah, I think a lot of people get a little obsessed with, like, the label. You know, what exactly are you? Like, can I put a label on your identity, right?
Brother, this society is sprung on labeling and titling and official status of this or that, just to separate us even further, bro. It's insane.
Yeah.
Conspiracy theory, like, put out there for you.
And the funny thing is that you go to Latin America, and a lot of times they don't, you know, they, like, the little bit of times that I've been in there, I haven't traveled as much as I want to, but you won't hear anybody ask you, like, oh, you're from Puerto Rico? And no, they just assume that you speak Spanish, and they're like, all right, cool, you're cool. When you come here and you go here, they're like,
they see brown skin.
Weird, you know, oh, you're Puerto Rican, or okay, you're a different type, or this different type. And the accent kind of like splits you up. But that's going into a whole different rant about what we do or who we identify ourselves as. But a little bit more about your story. So you were in high school, you learned English, right?
That's right.
And then you went to Harvard. How was that experience, man?
Again, you know, it's one of the central experiences. Whenever I think about who I am, it's just pretty much right there at the center.
Yeah.
Of, you know, becoming a man, becoming an adult, learning a lot, and in many ways also learning nothing.
So did you live on the Harvard?
Yeah, I lived on campus for 4 years.
You didn't get that Harvard accent?
No. But see, the interesting thing is that a place like Harvard, because they have so many resources, they can invest a lot on funding community events and funding different initiatives, and to make, you know, to sort of embrace people that are coming from a culture that's not the dominant culture. So I really felt that there was a strong Latino community there, but it was actually very divided, you know, along those same kind of lines that you're talking about. You know, are you Puerto Rican? Are you this? Are you that? Yeah. And the truth is that we are used to making a lot of assumptions about each other, how the other is, what the other stands for, just based on these labels. At Harvard, it was a very difficult experience. You know, I actually had to take a year off at some point because I didn't have the social capital. I didn't know how to go in there and how to interact with a professor, right?
Interesting.
How to the style of discourse, for example, it can put people off. Like, I speak with my hands. I put a lot of emphasis on words.
That's really interesting.
Some people immediately think, "Oh, are you angry? Are you frustrated?"
I'm what's going on?
I'm putting emphasis on this because it matters. So
I'm just very passionate, bro.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of the skill set that I would say I'm most grateful of having gained over the years, of like knowing that your core culture is not the dominant culture, but that you do have to walk in those shoes sometimes. You have to put in those shoes to get ahead, you know, to interact successfully with certain people. And that doesn't make you fake. That doesn't make you. Yeah. It just makes. I mean, it's called code switching. You're switching your code.
What's the word for it? It's kind of like chameleon. No,
kind of like blending in, right?
Culture chameleon kind of way, where you're able to assimilate between different cultures that are going on.
And that's very interesting because I remember when I went to college, same thing. I didn't know how to talk to a professor. You know, I went to a public high school, and I was so used to just my teachers being like Latinos or also being, came from the same area. So when I went to college, I was like, man, like, how do I write an email? You know what I'm saying? Like, how do I talk to my professor about this course? Like, I'm so used to just being upfront, personal, telling them, and then moving my hands, like you said, you know, and they'll be like, whoa, papa, like, relax, you know? And not until I met another Latina professor, she was able to kind of like instruct me a little bit, took me under her wing and kind of like gave me that, guided me in the right direction. And then just kind of showed me, hey, ain't nothing wrong with being professional. You know, ain't nothing wrong with being, having talking proper and going in there and not wearing my baggy clothing that I wore. Because I felt that if I changed the way that I spoke and if I changed the way that I dressed, that I was like dissing where I came from. But in reality, I had it in my heart. You know what I'm saying?
That's interesting because I have a completely different perspective. I'm first generation, but I mean, my parents, I mean, bless their efforts, they were able to put me through private school my entire life. So I never had the joy of, you know, CPS system and all its crazy faults that it may have. But I always grew up with teachers that were very personable and, you know, different ethnicities and backgrounds. Yeah. So going into college, I already knew how to talk to a professor.
Yeah.
You know, I already had the suit and tie on every day because of Catholic school. You know, I already knew how to do all that. And when it came to, like, going through class, going through school, I think the more difficult thing for me was the social atmosphere. You know, simulating between different, you know, like, when you go to high school, you have at most, like, 7 different social cliques.
Mm-hmm.
You have your jocks, you have your geeks, you have your cheerleaders, blah blah blah.
The
blah,
goths,
blah, right? Yeah,
those are my favorite. The goths,
the emos, all that, and so forth. In college, it intensifies because you have, I mean, depending on the type of school you go to, you know, the recruitment statuses or the recruitment tactics, what male to female ratio, all that stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. So one other thing too that we often talk about culture, but you got to, the reason, one of the reasons why it intensifies in college is because then you're going, there's this huge class divide too. In high school, it's safe to assume that you're more or less in the same class of people. There might be people that are a little wealthier, a little poorer, but there's nobody in, you know, there that is extremely wealthy. They'll be going to like a you know, elite,
you all kind of share the same opinion of the
world. You kind of have similar experiences. You're from the same city, the same neighborhood, probably,
you,
right?
Or something. You come like from that. A CPS school. I mean,
that's how it was.
Assume you're not rolling in the dough.
Even though the high school that I went to, there was a couple of people in there that you knew they were rolling in the dough, but I'm not going to say it was the legal dough.
Yeah. It wasn't the
tax-free dough.
That free 99.
So they still had to go to public school. But.
But yeah, that's true, because you know what? When you keep it within your same, let's say, economical level or economical status, you within, you know, the lower class, the middle class, the upper middle class, the high class, you all share the economical needs and wants in a way.
Well, shit, that brings us into a whole different conversation. And this is where I wanted to kind of lead today's conversation is, you know, how do you teach or how do you guide these individuals in that are in an urban setting? They all have kind of like the same, right? The same economical standpoint. They all have the same kind of concept. How do you guide them into going into a college where, to me or to a lot of us, it's like a huge culture shock, because we go in there and now you have this guy that, you know, he comes from a $1 million home and I come from, you know, middle class, probably poverty line. So how do you deal with those individuals in high school or grammar school? You're an elementary teacher, right?
It has to start in elementary. One thing, you know, it sounds cliche, but it's not being afraid of difference, not of others, but the fact that you yourself are different.
Yeah.
But difference under the light of the value that you bring. So a lot of times we think that students come in with deficiencies, right? Oh, I have to fix this attitude for the student. Oh, the student comes in knowing no math. In fact, students are bringing assets to your classroom. They're bringing a lot of positivity and cultural assets, like the willingness to be helpful in the classroom.
Yeah.
The willingness to be a peer mediator. And so accepting their difference, it's also a way of highlighting their value, because they're bringing different valuable assets into the classroom. But it has to start at that level, and it has to start with acknowledging people's different origins and people's different attitudes and different cultures. And, you know, I'll give you an example. I used to work in a charter school that was run by, you know, very intellectual, you know, Northern liberals. And it served kids of color mostly. And a big thing there was acknowledging there were different family structures, that there are people that come from a two dad home, that people that come from a two mom home. Yeah. And so embracing from the very beginning that sense that difference is not to be feared. Difference is something to be explored, to be talked about in the open. And to be treated, you know, with dignity. You got to treat people with dignity.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. Is difference is something not to be feared, right? You mentioned there, and if we go into it a little bit more, you know, and one of the biggest things that I've noticed is that the people that are getting taught, you know, in the university settings might not be as used to seeing difference, right? And when they go into it, it's a shock. So it's a two-way shock, I will say. Like, I go in, an urban Latino might go into college and you get a shock when you go in there. And then that person that went to college for academic and to teach goes into an urban setting and it's like another shock. So,
let me put it this way. If you're going into college and you are that shocked of the setting or the culture, then the system has failed you as an education.
Well, and I will be completely honest. When I went to college, I was shocked, man.
The system failed you, bro.
Yeah, it failed me. I'll be honest with you. I remember going into my counselor's office in high school. This is in, for you guys from Chicago, I went to Lincoln Park High School. So I went to the office and he's like, hey, you know, don't you want to go to a trade school? Don't you want to go to a ROTC program?
Just pushing it on you?
Bro, and I was like, he's like, yeah, because, you know, Latinos don't do well in college. And I was like, you mother.
Like, dude, that's so messed up.
So I went to Lewis University. That's how I know Ross.
What's up?
And it was a culture shock at first because I was the only Latino in my dorm, right? And it was nothing but, you know, a couple of athletic people. and I'm not athletic at all.
And can we spread the message in the room?
If you haven't noticed on my picture, I am not very thin.
He's a chunk that's a hunk. Let's put it that way. I got you, bro.
So
chunk that's a hunk.
So I went in there, and it was hard, you know, and I had to get myself included into the Latino organization and join a Latino fraternity in order for me to feel like I was back at home. And it would hit me hard, bro. Like, I remember going home every weekend because I couldn't deal with listening to Taylor Swift. And I couldn't be, you know, any of that stuff. And I need to blast my reggaeton and everybody on campus.
You know what? Can I tell a story real quick?
Yeah.
Just to cut you off. So I remember this is when me and him met. You know, he was DJing. He was the dude who would run the sound system and play the music for all the parties.
The DJ after on he campus.
Left, after he graduated, left. I became the dude. So like, I kind of like became his like replacement.
Everybody loves the Gorditos, bro.
Yeah,
I'm telling you.
Me and him specifically. Like, we had a radio show together. We were both in the same organizations. We're in the same frat.
Yeah.
You know, we did the same thing. I became like his replacement after he left. And I remember
the beard style.
The beard style. I remember I was playing my music for one like the welcome days for freshmen and stuff, and a bachata song came out. You know, it was like old Aventura song, whatever. It was jamming, and you just see the recruitment office walking by, and there's one prick. I'm not gonna say his name, but what's that shit? That's nasty. Huh. That nasty ass music. And I remember, you know, our favorite admission counselor from Lewis.
Yeah.
Just keeping names out, but she turned around. She's like, "That is grade A, great music. You don't know what the hell you're talking about."
Yep.
Told him off. That was her boss. I'm like, you know what? You go, girl.
Yep.
You go. Because that right there is a classic asshole.
So that's the big thing that I've noticed is that we have a lot of the teachers that come in. They'll go into an urban setting, and then it's a huge shock. They don't know how to deal with Juanito that's acting up. They don't know how to deal with the power struggle that we go through. And I know we were talking about this earlier. Me and Osiel were talking about this earlier and before the podcast. And we got into a big discussion. I'm like, yo, we got to stop because I need to bring this up into the podcast. And he was talking about the cultural iceberg. So bring that up, bro. I want you to really go into detail on that.
Sure. I mean, the idea is that what we see of culture is a surface structure, right? It's the manifestation of our preferences as far as food, dance, music, and maybe even dress styles. But what's beneath the surface are more abstract ideas like attitudes towards authority, notions of beauty, family arrangements, gender roles, things like that. And bringing it back to education for a second, as a teacher, you're a teacher. You're not an anthropologist. You're not going to study. You're going to say, all right, I have a Haitian, Colombian, and a Puerto Rican student. I'm going to go study these three cultures in depth. I'm going to read all the literature that's ever been written about Haitian culture. No. Your number one job is to eliminate whatever assumptions you might have and then get to know that student as a person, right? Yeah. So you eliminate whatever assumptions you've been taught by the media, by your colleagues, by anyone. Oh, you know, you might get a comment like, oh, watch out. That's, Haitian kids tend to be problematic. Your job is to destroy that thought in your mind and continue with the level of openness. But going back to the iceberg, I mean, essentially, a lot of times we say, oh, you know, my culture is this, my culture is that. But we're often talking about the surface features, okay? We're often talking about, oh, I dress this way, I dress this other way. And I think we also need to explore what it means, what our identity really is when it comes to those deeper notions. Like, for example, a lot of us Hispanic people, we are expected to get married. We're expected to, like... Yeah. Start a family like soon, you know, like sooner than later, kids. Like you know, like soon.
Progressive right? family lineage.
exactly.
Niños,
where are my kids at? Where are my grandkids?
But you know, depending on what our plans are, you know, depending on what we're trying to do, we might face some kind of shit at home because we're not like in this traditional path that we're trying to get married and have kids right away. You know.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing with different. There's so many different variables in each person's perspective. So the three of us here, we're both highly educated men that have a very unique view on the world, but we share a lot of commonalities. But we have three different backgrounds, you know? Sure. And I've definitely had more of a privileged background, but the same way, I don't act like a privileged asshole.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny how, like, you can have different characters be given the same type of ride and have a completely different, unique perspective on how they associate with certain people, how they have conversations, how they dress, how they act, how they view political situations, how they view social situations. It's just really interesting to, like, the study of humanity and how we act. Sure. It's very interesting.
And when we, you know, when we tell kids, one really important thing is to teach kids not teach them the myth of the powerful white man, right? So that they don't grow up fearing this white man that they've never really seen.
Interesting,
right?
Yeah.
So they, and the way you accomplish that is by, in like, you know, you were saying earlier, you can't necessarily expose people to all the cultures that they're going to face in the future. You can't, you know what I'm saying? I've never met someone from, you know, from the deep South, like from, you know, Alabama or anything like that. But I wouldn't, if I met someone, I would try my best not to make assumptions about the way they are, you know, because I'm, even if I know that they're making some about me, even if they're expressing certain assumptions about me, and that's like an extra burden, you know, that's why when we talk about cultural capital, I mean, especially people of color, we have to deal with this other layer of situations, right? We have to be cognizant of where we are, what we're saying. You know, we don't want to feed any of those stereotypes. So it's like one more level of effort that you have to put into everything you do. And, you know, you don't want your culture necessarily come out in your writing if you're writing a paper, right? But you shouldn't be afraid of it. You shouldn't be afraid of it because it's who you are. So you just, you know,
embrace it.
Get it done. Well, get her done.
There's a lot of, like I said earlier, there's a lot in today's society where we love to label things. So I work in media, I work in radio, host a show and all that. So initially they want to say, oh, that's a Latino DJ. Don't label me. I'm a DJ who happens to be Latino. Like, I'm proud of my background, I'm proud of my heritage, but don't pigeonhole me. Because too many times we label ourselves that. I'm proud of who I am, but don't say, oh, that's all he is.
Right. Oh, we want to make it safe because once you label something, then you can know what to expect. Like if you go to the supermarket and there's this can, you don't know what's in it, but you shouldn't be afraid of it. You should just open it.
I don't know, bro. If it's an unlabeled can, I'm not buying it.
Open it?
That's a very interesting thing because, like you said, you know, you have to kind of label it so that we feel safe to go. So when they say Ross is a Latino DJ, it's kind of them saying, hey, he's Latino, so watch what the fuck you're gonna say. Or don't say it to his face, or you know, he might have an accent, so watch.
Or just
that.
Like, oh, we have this color here, you know, we have this diversity.
Here's a perfectly
that too.
Every time I go for an interview, the first question they ask, and it's just subtle racism.
What, do you speak Spanish?
No, that's
that's
a runner
the second
up.
Question.
That's a runner up. No, but the like subtle racism is, oh, why is your first name Ross? Because my father chose to name me Ross. There's an interesting story, but now I'm not going to tell you.
Is it short for anything?
Yeah. Rosendo? No, bitch, it's Ross.
Rosalio?
Like, if you must know. But you know what I mean? It's subtle things like that where it's like, oh, you're Mexican. Your name is Becky.
You know, in a way, I almost kind of invite a lot of these assumptions. I feel like if
they're fun,
you like that.
But this is the thing.
He's a controversial
because
figure.
I can handle it. That's the thing. I can handle it. But think about someone who will be really put off or offended or feel diminished or oppressed if this comes up. So, in the other thing is too that low expectations are not a benefit for anyone. So when people say, oh, man, you're smart for a Latino guy, right? Or something like, oh, you're successful for a Latino. You don't benefit from low expectations. You never benefited from low expectations. And when we're talking about the classroom, it's even greater because a lot of times we see this kid there that, you know, that's acting up. And you're thinking, oh, well, that's just how he is. He's, you know, he's very wiggly. This is the code word in teaching. He's very wiggly. No, he's not wiggly. You're just not stimulating him to the level that he needs to be stimulated. And you cannot give up on him because he's wiggly. All right. You have to maintain super high expectations that he's going to get his job done even through the wiggliness. You know what I'm saying?
So I before finding my calling in radio, I worked in a
university.
My calling. I picked up the phone. I said, hey, you got a job? They're like, yeah.
God called him and said, I need you to be in CBS radio tonight.
We need you here now. Oh, but I used to work for a university as a recruiter. And the favorite thing, you know, administrators and you know, all the other colleagues like to say is, well, he's not getting taught right at home. It's not my fault. No. That means do your job and figure out. Your job is to facilitate a structure as a teacher. You're there to facilitate some type of structure and some type of growth. Whatever that is, that's up to you. You make your own agenda. Mm-hmm. You make your own coursework. Well, you get materials and you figure out the story you want to tell. Now it's your job to tell that story among all these different personalities and each get them to succeed.
Yeah.
Don't tell me you can't do it. That means you failed as a teacher. Don't tell me he's unteachable. Right. That means you don't know how to teach.
And that's why I wouldn't be able to be a teacher, because I hate multitasking. And for me to have like 30 different type of kids in a classroom that have different personalities, I'll give up.
See, I could do that. The thing that broke my heart and made me have to leave is I hate seeing somebody go down, you know, quicksand, and they know they're going down quicksand and they don't care and they just want to go further down. Mm. You know, like where you see a kid keep making bad decisions because he feels that's the only thing he could do. Mm. That's heartbreaking. Like, I don't know, like, how some people that work with children could do it. I had to get out. It's
tough, man. That's why I couldn't do the social work, like the social work.
You get mad props from me if you could do that.
I can't do that, man. And I give mad props to all those people that work in the social services area, because that's a hard job. Any teachers, that's a really hard job, because I can't deal with it. So I'd rather stick to podcasting and what I do in the other.
Yeah, let me talk about the issues.
Let me talk about it and see if you guys
see. That's why I was supporting the CPS Teachers Union, man. That strike that they had, I was like, I'm down with y'all. Like, we need to revolutionize our teaching structure because it lab rats children.
Yeah.
Why am I learning about trigonometry? Teach me about taxes. Mm-hmm. Teach me about healthcare. Teach me about bonds, savings, banking. Teach me about how to deal with Wall Street. Teach me how to deal with the mortgage.
You might want to be careful, because Ociel over here is a teacher. He might give you a left hook real quick.
Hey. No. And I agree.
No,
with
I'm
you
not saying every teacher, because you know what? There's some teachers that find the loopholes and are amazing professors that I had throughout my stint of education.
And I want to say, like, everybody has like that one teacher that sticks out to them, right? And it was like the teacher that taught the most. They were so different. And I remember in high school, I had a teacher, Mr. Young. And if you're listening, Mr. Young, man, mad props. This guy used to rap.
That's awesome.
In class. And he had a little ball that he would throw around called KB, Knowledge Ball. Man, this was like over 10 years ago, and I still remember about this. Probably a little bit longer. And he will throw the ball, and he'll rap, and he'll be like, you got to rhyme. Like, he'll start the rhyme, and then you had to end it with the answer, but it was part of that rhyme. So it will help you out. And then, man, everybody snapped. It was on social studies. Yeah, it was like,
bro, I'm putting that in my bag of tricks right there.
That's man, a great it will do it too. I've heard you freestyle.
This guy was dope, man, and I would never skip his class.
Yeah, you know what? I've had teachers like that. In college, I had like each step of the way, I had a professor, but in college, the seal the deal for me, it was Dr. Holbein. He taught philosophy and ethics, and that's what kind of made me choose my second major to be philosophy, because this dude, the way he taught it was, he would be like, okay, everybody get in a circle. This is what we call a symposium. You know, back then, Aristotle, Plato, all of them would get together monthly, and all the greatest minds get together in a room and talk for hours about life.
Yeah.
And you know, afterwards, they would have a party and hang out, all that, but like, we're going to do the educational aspect of it so you guys understand the art of communication. And the way he presented, you know, communication and, you know, able to
like disagreeing respectfully.
Yeah, like, know? In the room, we had rich motherfuckers that did not care about, you know, the poverty line, did not care about CPS schooling, did not care about the immigration issue, did not care about economics, because they're rich, they're spoon-fed. Right. Then you here have me, who's first generation. Next to me, you have a buddy who doesn't have papers. And then you have a girl that the first time she's meeting a black dude is in the class. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like such a different, unique.
But see, let me take that setting and let me take that scenario and show you how we really have to think about difference as an asset. What is positive about this girl that has never met a black person before? What is her? How? What is she bringing? What value is she bringing to the conversation?
She's bringing a clean slate that can be
exactly
painted to be a beautiful image that it should be. That
but we're she's all also. But she's also. Everybody has met a black person on TV, that or in the true. Media.
Yeah.
So she's the perfect person to have a conversation about. What assumptions have you made about black people? In but in that's the thing, because the discourse is so polarized, you know, so aggressive. Yeah. Just like in a way of like, I want to know, but I don't want you to feel like I'm judging. Like, this is not a place of judgment. Mm-hmm. I just want to know kind of what mm-hmm. notions you have. And in a way, I kind of, you know, I really don't mind ignorance. This is the thing. I think racism is evil, but ignorance is not evil. Ignorance is just a step that you're taking. So, for example, if I have an assumption in my head about someone because I don't know any better, that's not the same as saying I know, I've seen, I've been, and okay. I've made a choice to believe that this person, because of their race, is this way or that way.
So,
you know,
would, and taking it a little bit deeper, would you say, right? Let's say I'm a white or Caucasian female walking around campus. I've never seen a black person in person, right? And I'm walking, and since I'm walking, I see this black guy, and I clench my purse, and I'm nervous, or I hide my purse. Would you say that's ignorance or that's racism?
Hmm. Well, I think it's probably a mix of a lot of things, because you know what? Because
she's never met this guy before. She's never met any. She's never seen a black person.
But you have to also consider the fact, the male to female aspect of it also, because late at night you're walking. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, brown, or anything. The fact is, rape culture is a huge phenomenon that is back now. Especially, like, did you hear what was going on at UIC, where the dude just broke in and then tried to jump one of the co-eds that was there, but luckily her roommates and roommate's boyfriend was there to beat him up and get him arrested and chase him out and all that. It's like, nowadays, there's so many variables as to why someone may be offended. Mm. It's like we're walking on eggshells by me just telling la verdad.
Yeah.
Telling you
that's
the truth.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Like, to be honest, you know why I love your podcast? Because no matter what perspective it is, it's the truth you feel.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's the truth.
That's what we want. And I know some of our listeners might have some disagreements, and that's what we want you guys to hit us up and let us know. And well, and I know that. And one other thing that I wanted to bring up, back to the education, and which is what our main podcast is about today. And I don't want our teachers to feel like we're coming in at you guys. We're not at all. We actually have a teacher sitting in with us. We just want to kind of give our perspective about it. And we want to open dialogue about it so that you guys could hit us up and let us know, hey, I think it should be done this way. And if you do see a different perspective, hit me up. We could probably interview and get a different perspective behind what we were talking about. So,
thinking about that scenario of, I just got to tell you, I don't think racism is a feeling, right? I don't think racism is something that lives in the heart or the mind of a person. Racism is a series of relationships that have been created over time through history, through privilege, through economics. So this person may have a belief that this person, this other guy, this black guy is dangerous, but that belief didn't pop into her head from nowhere, right? That she's been fed some sort of cultural fodder from TV.
Some movies. She probably
from TV, from in a way, we're all complicit in creating the racism. That's why the only way to undo it, the only way to destroy it is together. And that's why the conversation... I feel like the temperature of the conversation is always very hot.
Yeah.
And I always get shit for kind of taking this devil's advocate perspective of, like, you know, how can we bring the temperature of the conversation down on, you know, like the people that are protesting, that are disrupting events and things like that. You know, how and the argument is very simple. You know, they've been disrupted.
Yeah.
They've been oppressed. They have every right to express the anger and frustration. But what I'm thinking is, how can I educate people about racism versus just stand up for my rights? How can we move forward trying to educate people about it? I mean, the biggest problem with racism is that it's invisible in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There is no company in this country that has a clause in its corporate charter that says we don't hire black people.
Oh, yeah.
But there is still racism manifested in their practices.
Well,
because it's invisible in a lot of ways, and that's the most dangerous crime.
A lot
crime.
Of it comes back to also, I mean, now that we're going further down the rabbit hole when it comes to racism, but I mean, this underhandly kind of talks about education, because this is a lack of education when someone shares a racist opinion or a racist view of something, because you have refrained yourself from being cultured to understand that you could walk by a minority man at night and they won't jump you.
It's like a cry for help, too. I think a racist instance, it's more than anything, it's a cry for help.
I mean, not only to like burden on that situation, but look, let's be honest. Who here doesn't like fried chicken? That's just the bomb.
Yeah.
If you don't like fried chicken, watermelon, like, dude, you're lying to yourself. It's amazing. Try
Unless
it.
You're vegan.
Share it with me. We'll share watermelon together. I'm down.
You would bring up food, man.
Because you're getting too heavy, bro. I had to light it up.
People are terrified. I think what terrifies a lot of, well-intentioned, educated, liberal white people is being labeled as a racist. And so, you know, they are afraid of making even a reference that, like a racial reference, you know?
But you know,
it's not a racial judgment, it's a racial reference. If you can tell me that, you know, I can sit here with a straight face and not get what you just meant by fried chicken and watermelon, but hey, we can talk about tacos, we can talk about, you know, naan bread that Indian people eat, that is, or like curries that are very, you know, have strong aromas. Yeah. So like, it's only a reference to the culture. It's not a judgment.
But you know, the funny
thing
there is, you know, when we actually talk about referencing certain cultures, there is an aptitude line where it's like black people, oh, don't say a black joke. Chinese people, even if they're in the room, ha ha ha, we're laughing at you, China man. Yeah. Like, it actually happens. And Latinos are like high on the list too, where it's like, we'll crack a wetback joke.
Yeah.
It's fine. But God forbid if you say the N word. Yeah. God forbid if you crack a black joke and you're not black.
It's very complex. I mean, and you know, there are people that use the N-word for like a cultural purpose or that just like, you know, for when you're with your friends or whatever.
I mean,
I'm
not condoning it.
It's a thing of like, you know, it's like peer fellowship or whatever sometimes.
Yeah, I'm not condoning it because I don't walk around going to you guys, what's up, Spick? What's up, wetback?
Yeah.
Like, I don't associate you with a negative connotated word. I talk to you as an educator. Hey, what's up, brother?
Yeah.
How you doing? I associate you immediately as if we're family.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, hey, I got no ill intentions to you. What's up, brother? How you doing? Having a good day? Stay safe.
And we could talk about, you know, this topic for hours and hours and hours.
For sure.
And it will never be the correct one because we all have our own opinions. You know, like you mentioned earlier, everybody has la verdad, but la verdad is according to you. You know what I'm saying? So whatever you want to bring it up. But back to this cultural iceberg, I know that you spoke about what's on top of the surface. But what's beneath the surface, what's under the surface, and you were bringing this up earlier when we were talking, was like just basic little things like how to talk to that parent. So if you could elaborate more on that.
Sure. It's, again, without judgment, it's important to know at least a little bit of the history of the people that you're approaching. Mm-hmm. And, you know, parent relationships in education are huge, crucial, man. Really, you can't be a good educator unless you have parent support to some extent. So, you know, when I approach a Spanish-speaking parent, I take great pleasure in speaking with them in Spanish, and not in a condescending way, like saying, you know, maybe you don't speak English, just in like, I know we can connect better. I know we can, I mean, for my own sake, I know that I can connect better when you speak to me in Spanish. But one thing I was saying, for example, was, you know, let's say that you're speaking to a Haitian parent.
Yeah.
Okay. And I've actually read some literature. I'm not pulling this out of nowhere, but the Haitian household tends to be a strict place, more towards conservative, more towards the religious angle. So when you're speaking to the parent, you might face a certain attitude, right? I don't mean that in a negative way. Just you might face a lot of agreement, right? The Haitian parent will agree with you as the teacher. But when, for example, if you're speaking to an African American parent, you have to be aware that because of racial power structures in systems that are in place, this person might see you, the teacher, as a representative of the power structures that are denying their kids the right education, who feed their kids absolute crap for lunch, okay, that are in a way oppressing them. So you have to kind of walk a different path. You have to take a different approach, because that person might see you as the manifestation of the power structures that are oppressing them. So it's really a mental operation, knowing, switching codes right there.
Hello, capitalism 101.
It comes back to switching codes, knowing, you know, knowing where you're at, knowing where you're speaking to, and proceeding respectfully. You know,
that's interesting.
You know what? At the end of it, it kind of just sums up to capitalism, the fact that we view each other as dollar signs.
True, and also
or a tool for a dollar sign.
We view education as like the way to. You know how you were saying that we've monetized education. Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Not just in the way that it's become privatized and there's a lot of money to be made.
Well, the value
you know?
Of the diploma. I mean, a bachelor's nowadays is shit. You have to get a master's. A master's now getting so diluted because it's being subtly forced. Now a doctorate is going to become another thing. They have to come with a new diploma structure.
Yeah, but why is the emphasis on, okay, get educated so you can make more money? How about get educated so you can be enlightened, so you can be a better citizen, so you can understand? And you know, George Washington Carver said this.
What they teach isn't enlightenment. It's lab rat system.
Yeah, it is like you become like a technician in a way. You're just like a technician.
Yeah, you lab rat, you're going through the procedures. Oh, Scantron test. Where's the creativity? Where's the infrastructure to harness our ability to have a conversation, a dialogue, an educated conversation to rebuttal with educated thoughts and hypotheses.
And I feel like that rarely ever comes from the top.
But then again, man, like we have to look away from learning that from the university perspective or from a classroom setting and actually taking the approach of joining organizations that are going to do that for you. Because I've noticed I didn't learn any of the stuff that I use right now in my career. I didn't learn that in the college setting. I didn't learn that in high school. I learned it from joining organizations that I met other scholarly gentlemen or scholarly people that actually molded me and helped me out. So I think a lot of it is something that we've lost because there's no more social interaction between people. You know, there's no more abuelito telling you to cross your leg or uncross your legs or basic stuff that used to happen back in the day. We've lost that a lot because everybody nowadays, and this is another conversation and I hate jumping in there, but nowadays everybody, when we get together, everybody just wants to do everything online. They don't want to meet with somebody. They don't want to talk to somebody face to face and they don't get to learn that new, that they don't get to learn, right? They don't get to learn that they don't teach in school because how are you going to put that in a lesson plan, right? You can't.
Right.
I personally think you can't.
Like,
but you learn that from chilling with OCL, right? From chilling with Ross, from chilling with Carlos, who's over in Michigan.
You can learn it the easy way when you're in elementary school. If you don't learn it in elementary school, then as you get older, it gets harder. You get less second chances. Mm-hmm. I feel like once you get to high school, there's really like almost like no second chances.
Well, I mean,
if you screw up in high school, that's like, what I was saying is that, you know what? In the classroom, probably one of the greatest skills that a kid can learn is how to disagree respectfully. And not disagree because I feel like it, to disagree, to articulate the disagreement, and to show some reasoning. I disagree with you because X, Y, and Z.
How do you teach that to a kid? Like, I'm a father, mm-hmm. right? So I want to be able to teach that to my daughter, how to con respeto, mm-hmm. you know, disagree with somebody. And because a lot of times we're so used to teaching our kids or our nieces or nephews that, hey, I'm older than you.
Right.
Don't you question
that's
what I say.
That's not the way here in this country. That's not.
You have to also, the fact that you, because I don't have any children, but I have two nieces that I hover over like I was the parent. I think the part of us teaching the children something is also with the hope that those children are also being taught by their parents the same type of views.
Perhaps,
and
it's so hard.
And stuff.
It's
like, and it's a lot of trust.
I know.
But you know what I mean? Like growing up is hard because you have these different perspectives, these different truths, these different falsehoods where children, you know, from certain circumstances, you know, feel the need to, you know, put that out on somebody else. Bullying, for example. Yeah. And
it's also a lot of the behavior that we model for kids. And, like, you know, as a teacher, I don't even care what happens at home as far as, like, I can't control a parent. I can't tell them how to educate their children. They're not going
to
listen.
I can't tell you how to raise your own kid, even though I know.
There are parents who model terrible behavior. Like, for example, if you disagree with someone and you start becoming aggressive, the kid is going to copy that behavior when they disagree with someone.
Yeah.
To answer your question about how you do that, you know, honestly, you have to have a graphic that says, I disagree with you about blank. I disagree with you about blank because, and let me share my idea or something like that. You know, something to that effect. And when the kids are small, they're not going to they're not going to really feel that yet. But just doing it over and over and practicing it and you modeling it also with them, yeah, it helps them. So they get to a point where they can interact with authority with a level of, with some capital, you know, with like, okay, you're saying this, Mr. Gonzalez, I see what you're saying, but I also want you to consider this perspective. And if kids can, I'm not going to rant anymore about that, but I really feel like that's probably, that's going to be like my number one priority. That's, as a teacher, that's my number one priority, that they get to do that.
I think that right there separates you from the normal teachers that we talked about and the ones that excel in teaching. Yeah. Because teaching is an art form. The fact that you understand that and accept that, saying, hey, here's the extra baggage my career comes with. Because each career path we choose comes with this certain baggage where it's like, okay, I'm doing this. This is what's expecting me. And this is what's more expected if I'm going to be great at what I'm doing. So the fact that you can say that, be like, okay, this is the extra mileage I'm willing to go for these children, that speaks level the type of teacher you're going to become or that you are. Like, for me, I'm going to go the extra step just because I remember when I was working at the old university, I went into the school, and it was a CPS school, and legit, I was doing applications to bring them into the university. Yeah. And I'm just seeing the worst GPAs ever. I'm talking about like a 0.5, 1.5. This girl had a 0.7 something, and she's like, you say, oh, so, you know, I want to go to your university. I'm like, well, what do you want to do? I want to be a nurse. I want to save lives. This is what I'm doing. I'm like, your GPA, what happened? She's like, I don't know. Just, you know, I'm not interested in school. Mm-hmm. I'm like, part of that's on you, but the other part is on the administration. You can't let a kid fall that far. Like, when I asked her to put down, like, the county she lived in, she put Lake because it was right next to her.
Yeah.
I'm like, you live in Cook County. Your address is right here in the city. Yeah. Like, it's Cook, not Lake. I get it. Like, you think the lake was right here?
Yeah.
Well, it's not. Oh. That's not your county. Like, the fact that you told me that, the system failed you.
Yeah.
Like, there should be some type of level of the child wants to learn. But I think after, you know, I'm still kind of young. So growing up, after being let down so many times by certain teachers, there's certain doors I've closed. Yeah. But the older I got, the wiser I've gotten.
That's exactly what happened.
And I've learned to be willing to open those doors again.
Yeah.
But that's because of certain life situations allow me to open my eyes and realize don't shut off certain venues because of certain dumbasses.
I mean, and also at the end of the day, it, like you both have said, it comes from home, you know, and teaching that. And it's hard, man. As a parent, it's hard to teach that.
You'll be fine.
As a parent, too, like, and I could really, really, I could kind of like understand where a lot of parents say, hey, you know, I'm so busy working all day. You know, I come home, I'm tired, you know? So a lot of parents, and I've seen this firsthand, and I've done this before, and I had to stop myself from doing it, was that you get home and you just turn on the TV for your kids to play or watch TV, and you just want to relax because we're so busy working that, you know, 12, 14-hour day, 16-hour
capitalism,
day.
Brother.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously there are, a lot of affluent families have a, you know, one parent stays home. I read something about a study where, and here we're, you know, the intersection of race and economics here in class, you know, higher class parents, they speak on average like so many thousands more words to their children, which they need to hear in order to develop their language skills by a certain time. But that is all, you can kind of ignore that argument, because what if you're a teacher and you have an English language learner in your classroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to find a way to tap into that child's curiosity.
Yeah.
And that's a universal. Every child is curious. You have to find a way to tap into that child's empathy. Yep. Mm-hmm. And that's a universal. You know, children are empathetic. You have to, they have to become independent learners, like you said, because if you don't, unless there's this great incentive where I'm going to get rich by learning, which is kind of a fallacy in a lot of ways. So you have to learn because you want to learn.
That learning.
Yeah. In elementary school especially, the job that teachers are doing, and I really, you know, and I believe this for myself. If I suck at teaching, I'm going to leave the profession, man.
Yeah.
Because I'd be doing harm. I wouldn't be doing any good.
Yeah.
But you have to find a way to tap into their curiosity and their empathy so that they enjoy learning, exploring things, figuring out, if I try, I can figure this stuff out, like, pretty much on my own, especially now with the internet and technology. You got to go that route. Make them independent learners, you know?
And as a closing, you know, I wanted to bring up that, you know, we've kind of emphasized and touched upon a lot of starting early on. So those of you guys that are listening to us, just, you know, give us your comments, your concerns, and just bring it up to us and debate us if you want us.
Don't debate me. I'm not good at that.
bring it up. we kind of wanted to touch upon this because we see it happening a lot in our culture. We see it happening a lot in the urban settings. And we kind of wanted to pinpoint. There's no correct answer, I want to say, of where the fault, who's to take the blame. But I think at the end of the day, we want to make sure that our kids are learning, and we're starting early to teach them. We're teaching them at an early age. So, you know, before we close out today, I also want to give you a big thank you for coming out here, Ociel, from Boston, and chilling with us.
Hey. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And next time, come through with a Boston accent so we could...
Got it. Come out to Logan Square.
And Ross from CBS Radio. I also wanted to give a huge shout out. Ross is going to be joining us a couple times here and there. We're also going to be joining him in his podcast. He has a podcast called Yo, Let Me Speak. Ross, can you let everybody know where they can find you?
I hate being the dude to correct people, but it's Yo, Let Me Talk.
Oh,
because you know what? I mess it up all the time, to be honest, and I'm the host. I have save files on my laptop called Yo, Let Me Speak. And
let me change that before I put that on iTunes. Yo, Let Me Speak.
Yeah, it's Yo, Let Me Talk. So, yeah, it's a brand new podcast by Knucklehead Productions. I'm the host of the show.
Okay.
And my other co-hosts, Corpus and Rioscos, are resident MC Supreme. He's our rapper who spits bars.
Yo, I heard a little snippet of the podcast. It's dope. It's very funny.
Thank you, man.
I encourage our listeners. It's a complete twist of what we do here. But it's a chill session. I felt like I was chilling, drinking a beer, and just like... listening to some funny jokes, and I wanted to jump in there and say something funny too. You know what I'm saying? So hopefully, if I make it through, I'm putting him on the spot, guys, so that he could invite me to the show.
Check us out on Facebook at Yo Let Me Talk, and then on our Instagram it's Yo _ Let _ Me _ Talk. Check it out.
Awesome, man! Thank you guys for joining today. Thank you, Ocia. Thank you, Ross. Be on the lookout. I'll put Ross's information out there so you guys could take me comí la lengua real quick.
You got super excited because it's a dope podcast.
So that you guys can listen to his podcast, and we're supporting each other here as Latinos as well. Sure. I'm putting a label, bro.
I'm going to have to speak Spanish in my next podcast.
Definitely. Bueno, mi gente, muchas gracias por estar con nosotros. Once again, coming to you live from Chicago, Ociel Ross, thank you guys so much. This is Christian, Hablando la Verdad.